Hey everyone, it's Tronster. We're in the basement. We're the Basement Game Dev Podcast. And we have a lively discussion tonight. With me is my co-host, Brett Dorley.
How's it going?
And also, once again, we have on the comfy couch, Eric Ruth.
Hey, guys.
And we have our fact checker in the background, unmiked, because we can't afford any more mics. We've got Gabe. Yeah, he's back there. He just took a deep sigh. Hey, on that note of affording mics, one of the things we have not brought up recently is that we do have a Basement Game Dev Podcast wish list on Amazon, and we really should be promoting this more because so far no one has bought us anything. So
it's a good reason to promote more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could just buy us a few cables or a stand. I mean, a stand's only $25. A spit guard is $17. The cable we have here is just $8. Heck yeah. So, you know, if anyone can lend some stuff, we do have some equipment here. And again, the rest of the equipment we borrow from the church that Brett and I go to. But we'd love to have all of our own equipment so we don't have to set stuff up. And so what is the topic? Morals is the topic. And morals in game design. And so what were you guys talking about? Was it so much, it kind of led off of morals? It wasn't directly in game design, but it was how games are portrayed. I mean, we talked about in the past, like at these conventions, you've got booth babes, and when we had the women game designers and artists all in here a while ago, they said they were fine with that as long as guys were equally portrayed. But why, you know, this stuff is still happening, and why even outside of real life or say inside of games do we have people still hyper-sexualizing female characters? And what are your thoughts of that from a game design standpoint?
Well, I guess I'll touch really briefly on what we started discussing there, in that the target demographic for the type of games that you see export those kind of characters is what we call the dude bro gamers, which are kids between the age of 9 and 21. They have the most expendable income, and by income I mean loosely, since a lot of it is based on either first jobs or Christmas gifts or things like that. So, you know, they don't actually have a lot of money to spend, but what money they do have doesn't have to go to anything.
No bills. Life.
Yeah, there's no real bills involved. So those people tend to eat up and consume a lot of games, and, you know, selling sex to a 13-year-old boy with a weekly income of like $15 from mowing the lawn or whatever he's got, that's an easy sell. And it's understandable. I certainly don't question why game companies, you know, target to them, because it makes perfect sense. But at the end of the day, what we're going to discuss here is how okay is that, not from the perspective of the designer or from the perspective of the consumer child, but more at the impact that that makes as a whole on the entire game industry, which is, of course, what we are all a part of. So I think that's what we're going to get into here.
Is that right, Brett?
Sure.
Oh, okay. More, you're a bit, you know.
Yes, please elaborate, Brett. Brett the Hitman, come on.
No, I mean, it was, I don't know who said it, but it was kind of my thoughts exactly where, you know, these sort of things, it's kind of, well, actually, I don't even know where I'm going off of that. Let's just pull it back in and go to the question list that we got here. And, well, you know, ask in terms of just not only sex, but like, what are the responsibilities of a game designer when they're making a game? Like, what is there a code of conduct? Or
I don't necessarily think it's the responsibility of the game designer as much as it is the responsibility of the people marketing the game. It is our role and responsibility as the game designers to make a fun experience and make a fun game. Not every game is targeted at every group. Not every game is made for everybody. I'm not expecting, if I'm working on a Hello Kitty game, for it to be going to the dude bro audience. I know that. I understand that. You know, there's Sesame Street games. There's, you know, that I'm not expecting to go towards that same market, but at the same point in time, I'm not expecting, if I'm making Grand Theft Auto, to sell to 7-year-olds. But that's not my, you know, it's my responsibility to make the best Grand Theft Auto I can. it's not my responsibility to make sure that it's in the hands of
the right consumer.
Of the right consumer. And it's more along the lines of, if we are involved in the marketing and in trying to publish the game or get the name out there, it is our responsibility to make sure that we're not saying, hey kid, you want these cigarettes because we got this cartoon camel. You know, it's and maybe that might be a line where it's like, we don't have cartoon looking characters, you know, going around killing people, so maybe Conker might be going too far in that case. But especially since the Game Boy Color game was a kid's game. But yes, for the most part, it is our job as game developers to make the best experiences possible. It is not necessarily our job to parent and make sure that the game is in the hands of the appropriate audience.
Brett is 100% correct. It's not even up to us to deliver the best experience possible. If you want, clearly that's the main goal, but think about how many people out there that make projects almost for themselves, not even just myself, because I can look at that from my own personal experience, but a lot of people make games because that game project means a lot to them, and they say, okay, well, even if the end goal isn't the next Psychonauts or Bioshock Infinite, it's at least something that I can enjoy, and that's fine. But you're absolutely right. It is not our jobs as developers. I'm not even sure it's 100% the marketing job. I think it's mostly in the hands of the parents, as you use the term to parent the industry. That's exactly whose hands it in. I mean, I can make whatever game I want. If I want to make something with a woman in a metal thong bikini doing battle against evil, that's, as a game developer, that's my right. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to play it. That's up to the parents to be active enough in their children's lives to whatever age appropriateness they decide on to decide whether or not that game is okay for them. That's why we have a rating system, you know?
And to kind of play off of that, we also have to be sensitive and understanding that we are not making games for everybody. So if we put a woman with a thong bikini in our game, it's going to turn off some people. It might turn off some people in our demographic that we're trying to shoot for. It might entice certain people in our demographic. It depends on, you know, not every game is for everybody, and so we have to understand that it is going to offend people if we put offensive stuff in there. But at the same point in time, it is still, we are to make the best experience that we can for whatever experience we're trying to make.
It's interesting you used the term offense, because I thought about something that occurred about 2 months ago. I heard a story that someone had bought Bioshock Infinite and they ended up returning the game. And I don't know if they were trying to sue or they had an issue in the return, but the whole issue was there's a forced baptism in the beginning. Like you can't proceed with the game unless you're baptized. And what's interesting is,
as in the character you're portraying.
Yeah, you as the character you're portraying. And I am an openly out there Christian, whatnot. And it's like, well, for me, it was very interesting because I had not experienced that in any game before, and it definitely made me stop and think, and it made the game that much deeper. And then to some degree I can empathize with this other guy, but then also to some degree I kind of think he went off the handle there with you know, just saying that, you know, well, it's against my religion, and I don't know, maybe he's some weird sect of Christianity I don't know about.
He was fine with killing people, but he was not fine with being baptized. And you know, it's the little things that people find offensive. You know, some people find the killing offensive, some people find the being forced baptism to be offensive. And obviously the guys at Irrational made that choice, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but it is very important to the story that mm-hmm. that does happen. And by doing that, they are it's part of the story that they are trying to present and the experience they are trying to create. That experience is not for everyone. It might not be for everyone because of the killing. It might not be for everyone because of the forced baptism. And the developer has to be okay with that. And the consumer has to realize, okay, this game is not for me, and return the game. Or if they're not allowed to return the game, have an issue with their retailer, or, you know, maybe take it up with Irrational or whatnot. But, you know, they shouldn't be any more angry than just losing the $60 that it cost to buy the game.
See, and that's another point, too. And you're right. Again, by the way, I'm completely on the same page with you, Brett. But this is the realm that we kind of live in, where a lot of people think because they don't like an experience, this game that's made for hundreds of thousands of even millions of people, but because they were taken aback, oh, this game should be banned. Mm-hmm. This game shouldn't be sold because what I feel is more important than the rest of the world. And it's this sort of egocentric consumerist ideals that bring up these problems to begin with. It's okay if the game's not for you. If you didn't like it, that's fine. No one's making you 5-star the game. Give it 10 thumbs up. None of that matters. If you don't like the game, return it. Get your money back. Go about your life. Everyone that did enjoy the game will not return it. They will not get their money back, and they will go about their life. Just leave it at that.
Did you ever have an issue with one of your games? Like, have you ever had a player or someone have some just issue with the morality or the choices of the killing or...
I've never, my gaming audience for my fans are, they're very core gamers. They're the kind of people that were already okay with that kind of stuff before they even got into my games, because my games features more of the same in terms of, you know, retro action and I guess you could say violence. So I've never experienced that. And to be honest, I don't think I ever really will, because my audience, my stuff goes to my audience and they like it, and that's the end of the day. And there are companies that make products that are kind of up in the air. Maybe this game will be a children's game. Maybe this one will be more for adults. I mean, look at Double Fine. Great company led by Tim Schafer. You've got the Sesame Street game they did for Wii, the Cookie Monster one.
Once Upon a Monster.
Once Upon a Monster. Thank you. Thank you very much, Brett. Definitely aimed at a children's audience. And then they've got Psychonauts, which is a little deeper and harder platforming, aimed for an older audience. So, you might be taken aback by something a company you like makes. I mean, you might think that they only produce this and then one day they produce that and you go, and you can have your opinions and you can have your thoughts and your morals, and that's fine. And I'm not asking you to change them or overlook them or anything, but don't, this is almost like the big debate everyone has with religion and the government. It's just, it's very much a do whatever you want, enjoy what you like, hate what you hate. Just don't try to make that the basis for everyone else's life too. Mm-hmm.
Kind of the how Double Fine makes so many different types of games for different types of people almost reminds me of this, of back when Oddworld announced Munch's Odyssey. So their first two games came out on the PlayStation, the PS1, and
Abe's Odyssey and Was Munch's second, or was that third? Was that the Xbox one?
Munch's was the Xbox one.
So Abe's Exodus, is that the one you're thinking of?
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The when they switched and announced that they were exclusively going Xbox for the next generation, people got really angry about that because they switched to the other platform. However, their thought process was they're going to be exclusive and all of their games for this generation are going to come out on this platform. And they're just like, if you want our games, you just have to buy this platform and you can get all of them. We're just going with this one. And it was just a really big...
A lot of hoopla.
Yeah. And it might not have been the best choice for them because of the lack of numbers of the original Xbox versus the PS2, but...
Oh, good Lord, yes. The Xbox did not win that console run.
Not the Xbox One, but the original Xbox.
Xbox One or the Xbox One?
Yes.
Well, the Xbox didn't win. Yes. That's what
I think.
Oh, my. Wow, you just blew my head there.
Yeah, no, that was the first thing that popped in my head when I heard the name. I was like, wait, oh, so they're trying to make a play on words.
I don't know if this is true, but we had a theory. Some coworkers that it was originally called the Xbox On, depending on from what accent is. But
I got you.
Because of all the hubbub on it, they added the E, and I don't know.
Maybe if the E was just a typo they ran with.
Maybe, but it's like, you know, I could actually see that as being that could be the case, because, well, I don't know.
I don't know. I like Xbox On better than I like Xbox One.
Honestly. Yeah, it's. like when the PSX came out. So the PSX is a console in Japan that is a PS2 and a DVR built together, whereas the abbreviation for the original PlayStation for a long time was PSX. Always the PSX.
Yep.
And then Sony decided, we're going to confuse everybody and come out with the PSX. So.
Okay.
But go, and we're getting off topic.
Yeah, we are. Back on a topic. Thank you for that.
Good conversation, wrong topic.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm thinking about when you're making choices in games, let's say, you know, children, being able to kill children. A lot of games recently, like, that is not an option game designers have done. I mean, do you agree with that? Do you think there should be games where, yeah, you can kill anyone, men, women, children? I mean, what are the ramifications of putting that option into a game?
You want to go first at time, Brett? I don't want to take your spotlight, brother.
I mean, Grand Theft Auto is a big example of this. There are no children in the world of Grand Theft Auto. Which
are there animals in Grand Theft Auto?
I don't remember if there were.
Yeah, Gabe's shaking his head. No, yeah. I think I agree with Gabe on this one. I don't think there were.
There might be like some pigeons that you can shoot. I think that's about it. Yes, because there's like an achievement or something for killing all the pigeons in the world.
Well, just like real life.
But yeah, no, it's a topic that Rockstar is willing to push so many boundaries, but they're not willing to go the step of killing children. In Fable, you can kill anybody but the children. So you can make Neverland, essentially, in Fable, if you want to, by killing all of the adults and leaving nothing but the children.
I think it's a silly... I mean, I'm not saying that all video games need to be able to kill children. That's not my point. My point is that if there's a game about this... I mean, you're just censoring yourself to a point that you're limiting options, and not saying that killing children is a great gameplay option, but if you wanted to, like, killing children for some reason is like this big, like, no. Like, anything with kids is like this, I don't even know where this arbitrary line from society came from, where kids are just untouchable. I don't know when it happened or where it came from, but that just seems to be the line. And just like you said, in GTA, no kids. In Fable, no kids. You should just be able to, if it's necessitated in storyline. I mean, what if you're hunting a monster in a game that just kills children and you have to see the monster kill the children for you to become emotionally attached in order to go hunt the monster? You see,
that's different though, because like in Heavy Rain, it's been out for some years, so you're trying, essentially,
you're going to spoiler?
Yes.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Your kid gets kidnapped, and one of the characters you play as, their kid gets kidnapped, and essentially, if you don't solve the problem in time, their kid will die. But that is not an action of you killing the kid, it is you failing to save the kid. And it's not a voluntary... Unless you're,
I see what you're saying,
and it's not that kids can't get hurt. I mean, there's bully where it's, you know, you can fight kids, but you are a kid,
right?
And so that's kind of, I guess, different. And it's not that kids,
but kids
can't,
don't actually die in bully though, do they?
No, yeah. They don't. But and it's not that there aren't games where kids die. There are games where kids die, but it is never a user generated action of I'm going to kill this kid. And I think it's more along the lines of, I think a lot of game developers don't cross that line because there's enough media
ramifications
there's other things that they already do that they get flack for. So why add another thing to the,
well, to answer that question, no publicity is bad publicity. Remember Mortal Kombat,
mm-hmm.
was, at the end of the day, for all fighting game enthusiasts, the original Mortal Kombat was not actually a good fighting game. I mean, mm-hmm. it just did not have the type of depth, that you find from like stuff like King of Fighters and Street Fighter II, stuff like that. But
it was more accessible to casual fighters, though.
It was, but what was the big driving home point is that, I mean, everybody who knows about the history of gaming knows that one of the reasons we even have a rating system for gaming is because of Mortal Kombat, because it was such a negative thing and parents were throwing fits left and right. That was its own publicity, and MK just blew up
mm-hmm.
from that. I mean, I wouldn't say that the reason that companies don't do something like that isn't always necessarily because of the negative publicity. That's my only point here. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the negative publicity, you know, works in their favor.
There's a indie project that I was always hoping would be remade after Mortal Kombat came out. And you could download it off the BBSs back in the day, called Pong Combat. And you play as a Pong paddle. And it's a game of Pong, but you have special moves and there's a fatality. So you can actually rip apart a player's Pong paddle and have blood gush out.
Is the Pong paddle of legal age, though? Because if not, there might be some problems with the sensors.
Yeah, there could be issues with that. Okay, so that's children. Let's talk, and we talked a little bit about, I mean, violence in general, but sex in games, and also in terms of morality. And here's something that I haven't quite wrapped my head about, and this may not be an issue for everyone. Again, this is from a Christian standpoint, and I'm kind of ringing this bell a lot here since it's tied with morality, but from many, many religions, and Christian just being one of them, like, there are issues with, like, sin and lust. So you make a game, and let's say it's not sex just based on, like, a skimpy outfit, but, like, there's actual sex going on inside of a game. And just trying to figure out, like, what that means in terms of morality. Like, if you cause someone else to lust, but it's not a real person, it's a figment of the imagination, is it an issue? Is it an issue from a religious standpoint? Is it an issue from a societal standpoint? You know, where do you draw the line if it's someone who's attractive versus someone young and attractive versus a kid? And you've got people doing some, like, really sick and twisted stuff in the game. Like, what responsibilities do we have as game designers? Or also, does that rule still hold true that you just put whatever's out there and
it'll either find its audience or not, right?
Right.
So, the guys who make Heavy Rain and the game, I'm blanking on the name of the game they made before that, they both have sex sequences in their game that can happen. But the lead designer for that game essentially has come out and said that they make games for the mature audience, for, you know, it's not like it's excessively vulgar. It's nothing worse than you would see in an R-rated movie. It's not. It is somewhat of a taboo for games. It's not that they try to hide it or anything. But they are definitely making a game for an audience. You know, it's no worse than, like, a James Bond sequence almost. I mean, maybe it's a little bit. I guess James Bond's PG-13, but or some of them are, but yes, now they've made that clear distinction that that's what they're doing, and it's part of that culture and in that story, and it's not meant to be vulgar or excess. It's just that is the story of those characters, and that's what happens to them. It's not something where it's over the top in any way. But it is a mature story, and that happens in that mature story.
How about you, Eric? Have you had to face any of these issues with any of the games you've done, or any of the games have you not touched because of some of these issues?
No. And I will share with the information with you, as you had brought up, some people look at these things in either a context of their religion or a context of what society thinks is okay, or they hold against these various standards. You know, I myself am not religious, so nothing against those who are, just it's not for me. And because of that, I have no religious sway, so I can only look at these from a societal sort of standpoint. And I still think that we stick to the guns of what we were talking about earlier in that, I mean, I would not play a game where, like, a child is brutally raped or something like that. I would find that personally offensive and not do it. That doesn't mean I'm going to take away everyone's freedom to do so. Because even though I don't like it and I think it's wrong, that doesn't mean someone
maybe
else.
Maybe you should track the IP address of the people who do enjoy that.
It's a new tool for the government.
Yes.
They don't have enough tabs on us already, so they're going to introduce that in Google Glass. They'll pretty much have us locked down wherever we go. But yeah, I mean, there's an audience for everything. And yeah, there's definitely games with mature sexual content. It's not like directly pornographic to, you know, say. And, you know, for a mature audience, it's just part of the story. And there you go, like with Heavy Rain, for example. And, you know, the people that this goes back to parents policing their own kids and making sure that they have the content they think is suitable for them. But at the end of the day, you know, for the most part, I think video game companies should have the freedom, the artistic and creative freedom to do what they feel works in their universe with their characters and their story. And, you know, it's, I mean, we've got some pretty nasty pornographic material out there that I promise you is like six times worse than any video game I've seen with sexual activity. And that includes GTA's Hot Coffee and God of War's spin the joypad games, you know.
And I know of people who have worked at studios that have left studios because they've gotten the Duke Nukem franchise, because they find that the Duke Nukem franchise for them personally is too vulgar and they don't want to be associated with that product, and that is their choice. And maybe it's a religious choice, maybe it's a societal choice, whatever it is. And that is good for them for standing their ground and being like, all right, I can't do this, and I'm going to go somewhere else, because they chose that that game is not for them to be played, and so they don't want to help make that game. Whereas there's other people who stayed, other people who came, and yes, it's there are different developers, and if you are working on something that you're not comfortable with, that you don't want to see out there, don't work on it.
Oh yeah, leave. Absolutely.
And it is your responsibility to not create something that you are not comfortable with. Now, that doesn't mean you have to make games just for yourself. I mean, you don't want seven-year-olds making games about Sesame Street, or four-year-old. I mean, you need to have adults who know how to make games right, for younger kids. But there are people who want to make games for kids, and so they should be able to do so. So just make sure that you're not violating your own morality, and if something is in the game that you don't agree with and that you wouldn't be proud of, try to have it taken out or leave, and you know.
Right. Okay, well, let's hit one other topic of morality. We've talked about, you know, killing and death and sex, but one that's come up a lot in the media recently has also been raging, particularly in the MOBA aspect. And you've got players who just get so upset and angry, and some have had been banned from life. And I know that the times that I have, I don't use profanity often. I'm not completely anti-profanity, but I try not to. But the times that I use it most often and get most frustrated is when I have a streak of losing matches in Dominion on League of Legends. It's so bad that with one weekend I set aside, I have not allowed myself to play any League of Legends back in May. So I'm wondering, like, what do you guys think about, is there any more responsibility to prevent players from overly raging or for cutting down other players or just mitigate
that's poor parenting.
The anger?
Yeah, that's...
Are you saying my mom was a bad parent?
Yes. No. no, I mean, okay. you're not doing it to the excess at which some of these people are. But there are a lot of, you know, you hear the stories of the 12-year-old who is, you know, cursing every other word in the game and yelling at his mom to, you know, get him a sandwich or something over Xbox Live. And there are stories like that, and I'm assuming they are real. And, you know, I go into party chat, so I don't hear all that crap. But And, you know, I do that because there are a lot of people online who will not be themselves online because they're not in real. There are a lot of people who are excessively vulgar and angry and offensive because there is a computer screen, there is not a person.
Right, it's anonymity. It grants people the ability to be basically, for lack of a better term, douchebags with little to no repercussions. Yeah. When we're in person here, like I might play you in League of Legends on another computer and you might be causing my team to lose, and I'll say, yeah, go screw yourself and yell and rage, and you might yell and rage back at me. But here we are in company and we know each other and we're talking and we're face to face. Even if we did anger each other, it wouldn't ever get that bad because we're sitting here together face to face.
Yeah, and because I understand that it is a real person.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people grow up playing single player games and it's just them versus the computer. And then when they start going to play these online multiplayer games, they're so used to this distinction and this separation. And even though they know they're interacting with other players and they talk to people, but because they've gotten so comfortable with these experiences of single player by themselves, there's still also this aspect that they're not real. You know, they're not a real person on the other end. So it doesn't matter what I do. I'm just yelling at my box.
I just came up with a great idea. I want this to be known on the podcast.
Okay.
I think a great test of this, because that's a really good point, Brett. I think a good test of that would be to find a way to contact, actually, I have friends at Riot. What do I mean? Find a way to contact them. I could contact Riot and they could set up some test servers where people can only play if they have a camera. Right. And when you camera on the screen, they could letterbox the actual gameplay window and top five, you know, it would have like the camera view of the people you're playing with, including yourself. And the bottom would be the other team. And that way you can literally see the people you're with and against. You could see what they're wearing, what they're eating or drinking. Mm-hmm. They stop being a random person at the end of a chat box and they start being, oh, there's the guy who's got the mohawk. There's the girl with the short hair. There's the, you know, and maybe by making them more personable and by showing that they're actual people that exist, maybe it'll reduce. My guess based on just logical thought, my time in League of Legends, this conversation, et cetera, would be that it would reduce probably quite a percentage. I mean, a very hefty percentage of that just by knowing that the people you're with are people and there they are instead of just nameless, faceless robots.
I don't think it would be an instantaneous thing. I think it would be an over time, like as soon as they get reactions out of these people, they're starting to see these facial expressions, you know, these types of things. Like, it's not going to just automatically happen. It's as soon as they start seeing this feedback that how their words are affecting these other people, that's when you're going to start to see.
So you think there is some validity in this idea that if we could see them, that would help?
I believe so, yes.
What do you think, Tronster?
I'm worried about the amount of exposure that will happen, the TTP. And you know,
yeah, well, yes, no. Everybody will be like, all right, this person's, you know, doing that. And you'd have to have a system for that, otherwise, yes.
Right.
We're talking specifically about the theory of this more so than the actual practical.
It could be interesting. It's a good, I think it would be an interesting experiment. I am not as confident that it would be a positive outcome, but I think it definitely merits trying it out. I don't know whether or not Riot has the infrastructure or the time. They have the infrastructure. They have a great infrastructure, but do they have the time and be willing to do it? I don't know. But
I don't know. I'm actually going to bring that up. I'll talk to one of my guys over there and just pass that along as an idea. I think that would be neat.
Joel or George, if you're listening.
No, Thomas idea. Or Richard or Jen, if you're listening.
Dang, you get more.
I don't really know anybody at Riot. So.
Who are your Riot friends, Brett?
Come on, man. We're showing off.
I know
off
the same
audience.
Joel you know, but that's about it.
Everyone knows Joel. If you're, we haven't really said this, but if you're not in the game industry yet, you got to meet Joel, and then that's one of your ways.
If you ever run into Mega 64, tell them that Joel said hi, because apparently people all over the world tell them that Joel said hi.
Yeah, that is the thing to do. But with that, we're about out of time. Guys, you have any final thoughts on this topic of morality?
Don't make anything that you're not okay with.
Yeah. That's I agree with that. Do what feels right to you and play what feels right to you. If you don't like it, don't play it. Mm-hmm. If the company you're working mm-hmm. for make it something you don't like, don't work on it.
And be respectful of games that are not made for you.
Yes, that's I think that's actually even bigger point. Good call. If it's not for you, it doesn't mean it's not for everyone.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening to us. Tune in again. We're going to have more great game design talk in the basement. Keep making games.